All right, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. It is Thursday, January 12th, 2012. What a fabulous day to be alive. What a great day to be awake. As Denise says, alive, awake, aware, enthusiastic about the incredible futures that lie before each one of us, starting with today. Absolutely, today is the first day of the rest of our lives, my friends, and I'm excited to be a part of your day with you. Today, we are going to finish out the chapter on organized planning in the book Think and Grow Rich. And there is a checklist in there. You know, yesterday, last couple of days, we've been going over points of leadership and major causes of failure. And there's another 28 questions in that chapter where Napoleon encourages us to take inventory of ourselves. And they're fantastic questions. As you go through those questions, you're going to quickly pinpoint where, if there are spots in your personality in your life that are causing you to be held back in some way. You know, the first question is, have I attained the goal which I established as my objective for this year, or in other words, last year, 2012? And if the answer is no, these questions are going to help you pinpoint why that was, and then you can flip, you know, the negatives into a positive moving forward in 2012, so that you can achieve your definite purpose in 2012. I don't want to go through these on the call today. These are going to be way more effective if each of us take time, personal time, to go through these questions. So I want to challenge everyone to do that at some point today. Go through these 28 questions and analyze yourself. And what I did want to do is I wanted to finish out this chapter. There's a lot here in the final parts of this chapter, and it's a chapter that needs to be read. It's a chapter that was, or it's a piece of content that was incredibly applicable in the 1930s when Napoleon wrote it, and it's a little bit eerie how applicable it is today. And I'm telling you, some people that are going to hear the message today, hopefully not. I don't think anyone on this call will be offended, but there are people in the world that would probably hang up hearing the words that I'm about to read to you. And there are also people, entrepreneurs at heart, those who are committed to delivering more value than the money they obtain from people. Those types of people are going to be struck on a deep chord. And they're going to say, you know what, those words resonate with me. You know what, I hear the battle call. You know what, I'm excited about moving forward and developing myself and delivering more value than money I return. Okay, so pay attention, and I have a feeling that everyone on this call is going to be in the latter group. Okay, so the content begins with the subject title, Where and How One May Find Opportunities to Accumulate Riches. And it is quite a read, as Bill does say from time to time, so please bear with me. Now that we have analyzed the principles by which riches may be accumulated, we naturally ask, where may one find favorable opportunities to apply these principles? Very well, let us take inventory and see what the United States of America offer the person seeking riches, great or small. To begin with, let us remember, all of us, that we live in a country where every law-abiding citizen enjoys freedom of thought and freedom of deed, unequaled anywhere in the world. Most of us have never taken inventory of the advantages of this freedom. We have never compared our unlimited freedom with the curtailed freedom in other countries. Here, we have freedom of thought, freedom in choice and enjoyment of education, freedom in religion, freedom in politics, freedom in the choice of a business profession or occupation, freedom to accumulate and own without molestation all the property we can accumulate, freedom to choose our place of residence, freedom in marriage, freedom through equal opportunity to all races, freedom of travel from one state to another, freedom in our choice of foods, and freedom to aim for any stage in life for which we have prepared ourselves, even for the presidency of the United States. We have other forms of freedom, but this list will give a bird's eye view of the most important, which constitute opportunity of the highest order. This advantage of freedom is all the more conspicuous because the United States is the only country guaranteeing to every citizen, whether native-born or naturalized, so broad and varied a list of freedom. Next, let us recount some of the blessings which our widespread freedom has placed within our hands. Take the average American family, for example, meaning a family of average income, and sum up the benefits available to every member of the family in the land of this opportunity and plenty. Food. Next to freedom of thought and deed comes food, clothing, and shelter, the three basic necessities of life. Because of our universal freedom, the average American family has available at its very door the choicest selection of food to be found anywhere in the world, and at prices within its financial range. A family of two living in the heart of Times Square district of New York City, far removed from the source of production of food, took careful inventory of the cost of a simple breakfast with this astonishing result. And these are old numbers, obviously, but here's what the numbers were. The principles are still applicable. The numbers are a little bit lower, actually a lot lower than they are today. Cost at the breakfast table, grapefruit juice from Florida, 2 cents. Rippled wheat breakfast food from a Kansas farm, 2 cents. Tea from China, 2 cents. Bananas from South America, 2.5 cents. Toasted bread from Kansas farm, 1 cent. Fresh county eggs from Utah, 7 cents. Sugar from Cuba or Utah, well below a fraction of a cent. Butter and cream from New England, 3 cents. Grand total, 20 cents for a breakfast. It is not very difficult to obtain food in a country where two people can have breakfast consisting of all they want or need for a dime apiece, or today for a few dollars. Observe that this simple breakfast was gathered by some strange form of mesic from China, South America, Utah, Kansas, and the New England states, and delivered on a breakfast table ready for consumption in the very heart of the most crowded city in America at a cost well within the means of the most humble laborer. The cost included all federal, state, and city taxes. Here is a fact that the politicians did not mention when they were crying out to the voters to throw their opponents out of office because the people were being taxed to death. B, shelter. The family lives in a comfortable apartment heated by steam, lighted with electricity, with gas for cooking, all for $65 a month. Wow, get that, New York. Wow, $65 a month. In a smaller city, for a more sparsely settled part of New York City, the same apartment could be had for as low as $20 a month. The toast they had for breakfast in the food estimate was toasted on an electric toaster, which cost but a few dollars. The apartment is cleaned with a vacuum sweeper that is run by electricity. Hot and cold water is available at all times in the kitchen and the bathroom. The food is kept cool in a refrigerator that is run by electricity. The wife curls her hair, washes her clothes, and irons them with an easily operated electrical equipment on power obtained by sticking a plug in the wall. The husband shaves with an electric shaver, and they receive entertainment from all over the world 24 hours a day if they want it without cost, by merely turning the dial of their radio or now their TV. There are other conveniences in this apartment, but the foregoing list will give a fair idea of some of the concrete evidences of the freedom we of America enjoy. And this is neither political nor economic propaganda. See, clothing. Anywhere in the United States, the woman of average clothing requirements can dress very comfortably and neatly for less than $200 a year, okay, a little bit more than that now, and the average man can dress for the same or less. Only the three basic necessities of food, clothing, and shelter have been mentioned. The average American citizen has other privileges and advantages available in return for modest effort, not exceeding 8 hours per day of labor. Among these is the privilege of automobile transportation, with which one can go and come at will at a very small cost. The average American has security of property rights not found in any other country in the world. He can place his surplus money in a bank with the assurance that his government will protect it and make good to him if the bank fails. If an American citizen wants to travel from one state to another, he needs no passport, no one's permission. He may go when he pleases and return at will. Moreover, he may travel by train, private automobile, bus, airplane, or ship, as his pocket permits. In Germany, Russia, Italy, and most of the other European Oriental countries, people cannot travel with so much freedom and at so little cost. So what's the miracle that has provided these blessings? We often hear politicians proclaiming the freedom of America when they solicit votes, but seldom do they take the time or devote sufficient effort to the analysis of the source or nature of this freedom. Having no axe to grind, no grudge to express, no ulterior motives to be carried out, I have the privilege of going into a frank analysis of that mysterious, abstract, greatly misunderstood something which gives to every citizen of America more blessings, more opportunities to accumulate wealth, more freedom of every nature than may be found in any other country. I have the right to analyze the source and nature of this unseen power because I know and have known for more than a quarter of a century many of the men who organized that power and many who are now responsible for its maintenance. The name of this mysterious benefactor of mankind is capital. Ooh, dirty word, right? Capital. Capital consists not alone of money, but more particularly of highly organized, intelligent groups of men who plan ways and means of using money efficiently for the good of the public and profitability to themselves. These groups consist of scientists, educators, chemists, inventors, business analysts, publicity men, transportation experts, accountants, lawyers, doctors, and both men and women who have highly specialized knowledge in all fields of business and industry. They pioneer, experiment, and blaze trails in new fields of endeavor. They support colleges, hospitals, public schools, build good roads, publish newspapers, pay most of the cost of government, and take care of the multitudinous detail essential to human progress. Stated briefly, the capitalists are the brains of civilization because they supply the entire fabric of which all education, enlightenment, and human progress consists. Money without brains is always dangerous. Properly used, it is the most important essential of civilization. The simple breakfast here described could not have been delivered to New York, the New York family, at a dime each or at any other price if organized capital had not provided the machinery, the ships, the railroads, and the huge armies of trained men to operate them. Some slight idea of the importance of organized capital may be had by trying to imagine yourself burdened with responsibility of collecting without the aid of capital and delivering to the New York City family the simple breakfast described. To supply the tea, you would have had to make a trip to China or India, both a very long way from America. Unless you are an excellent swimmer, you would become rather tired before making the round trip. Then, too, another problem would confront you. What would you use for money, even if you had the physical endurance to swim the ocean? To supply the sugar, you would have had to take another long swim to Cuba or a long walk to the sugar beet section of Utah. But even then, you might come back without the sugar, because organized effort and money are necessary to produce sugar, to say nothing of what is required to refine, transport, and deliver it to the breakfast table anywhere in the United States. The eggs you could deliver easily enough from the barnyards near New York City, but you would have a very long walk to Florida and return before you could serve two glasses of grapefruit juice. You would have another long walk to Kansas or one of another wheat-growing states when you went after the four slices of wheat bread. The Ripple wheat biscuits would have to be omitted from the menu because they would not be available except the labor of a trained organization of men and suitable machinery, all of which call for capital. While resting, you could take off for another little swim down to South America where you would pick up a couple of bananas. And on your return, you could take a short walk to the nearest farm having a dairy and pick up some butter and cream. Then your New York City family would be ready to sit down and enjoy breakfast, and you could collect two dimes for your labor. Seems absurd, doesn't it? Well, the procedure described would be the only possible way these simple items of food could be delivered to the heart of New York City if we had no capitalistic system. The sum of money required for building and maintenance of the railroads and the steamships used in the delivery of that simple breakfast is so huge that it staggers one's imagination. It runs into hundreds of millions of dollars, not to mention the armies of trained employees required to man the ships and trains. But transportation is only a part of the requirements of modern civilization in a capitalistic America. Before there can be anything to haul, something must be grown from the ground, manufactured, and prepared for market. This calls for more millions of dollars for equipment, machinery, boxing, marketing, and for the wages of millions of men and women. Steamships and railroads do not spring up from the earth and function automatically. They come in response to the call of civilization, through the labor and ingenuity and organizing ability of men who have imagination, faith, enthusiasm, decision, persistence, the watchwords of this call. These men are known as capitalists. They are motivated by the desire to build, construct, achieve, render useful service, earn profits, and accumulate riches. And because they render service without which there would be no civilization, they put themselves in the way of great riches. Just to keep the record simple and understandable, I will add that these capitalists are the self-same men of whom most of us have heard soapbox orators speak. They are the same men to whom radicals, racketeers, dishonest politicians, and grafting labor leaders refer to as the predatory interests or Wall Street. I'm not attempting to present a brief for or against any group of men or any system of economics. I'm not attempting to condemn collective bargaining when I refer to grafting labor leaders, nor do I aim to give a clean bill of health to all individuals known as capitalists. The purpose of this book, a purpose to which I have faithfully devoted over a quarter century, is to present to all who want the knowledge the most dependable philosophy through which individuals may accumulate riches in whatever amounts they desire. I have here analyzed the economic advantages of the capitalist system for the twofold purpose of showing, one, that all who seek riches must recognize and adapt themselves to the system that controls all approaches to fortunes, large or small, and two, to present the side of the picture opposite to that being shown by politicians and demagogues who deliberately becloud the issues they bring up by referring to organized capital as if it were something poisonous. This is a capitalistic country. It was developed through the use of capital. And we who claim the right to partake of the blessings of freedom and opportunity, we who seek to accumulate riches here, may as well know that neither riches nor opportunity would be available to us if organized capital had not provided these benefits. For more than 20 years, it's been somewhat popular and growing pastime for radicals, self-seeking politicians, racketeers, crooked labor leaders, and on occasion religious leaders to take pot shots at Wall Street, the money changers, and big business. The practice became so general that we witnessed during the business depression the unbelievable sight of high government officials lining up with the cheap politicians and labor leaders with the open to throttling system which has made industrial America the richest country on earth. The lineup was so general and so well organized that it prolonged the worst depression America has ever known. It cost millions of men their jobs because those jobs were inseparably a part of the industrial and capitalistic system which formed the very backbone of this nation. During this unusual alliance of government officials and self-seeking individuals who were endeavoring to profit by declaring open season on the American system of industry, a certain type of leader joined forces with the politicians and offered to deliver voters in return for legislation designed to permit men to take riches away from industry by organized force of numbers instead of the better method. Pay attention here, folks. Instead of the better method of giving a fair day's work for a fair day's pay. Millions of men and women throughout the nation are still engaged in this popular pastime of trying to get without giving. Some of them are lined up with labor unions where they demand shorter hours and more pay. Others do not take the trouble to work at all. They demand government relief and are getting it. Their idea of their rights of freedom was demonstrated in New York City, where a violent complaint was registered against the postmaster by a group of relief beneficiaries because the postman awakened them at 7:30 a.m. to deliver government relief checks. They demanded that the time of delivery be set up to 10 o'clock. If you are one of those who believe that riches can be accumulated by the mere act of men who organize themselves into groups and demand more pay for less service, if you are one of those who demand government relief without early morning disturbance when the money is delivered to you, if you are one of those who believe in trading their votes to politicians in return for passing of laws which permit the raiding of the public treasury, you may rest securely on your belief with certain knowledge that no one will disturb you. Because this is a free country where every man may think as he pleases, where nearly everybody can live with but little effort, where many may live well without doing any work whatsoever. However, you should know the full truth concerning this freedom of which so many people boast and so few people understand. As great as it is, as far as it reaches, and as many privileges as it provides, it does not and cannot bring riches without effort. There is but one dependable method of accumulating and legally building holding riches, and that is by rendering useful service. No system has ever been created by which men can legally acquire riches through mere force or numbers, or without giving in return an equivalent value of one form or another. There is a principle known as the law of economics. This is more than a theory. It is a law no man can beat. Mark well the name of the principle and remember it, because it is far more powerful than all the politicians and political machines. It is above and beyond the control of all the labor unions. It cannot be swayed nor influenced nor bribed by racketeers or self-appointed leaders in any calling. Moreover, it has an all-seeing eye and a perfect system of bookkeeping in which it keeps an accurate account of the transactions of every human being engaged in the business of trying to get without giving. Sooner or later, its auditors come around, look over the records of individuals, both great and small, and demand an accounting. Wall Street, big business, capital, predatory interests, or whatever name you choose to give the system which has given us American freedom, represents a group of men who understand, respect, and adapt themselves to this political law, this powerful law of economics. Their financial continuation depends upon their respecting the law. Most people living in America, it's capitalistic system and all. Like this country. I must confess, I know of no better country where one may find greater opportunities to accumulate riches. Judging by their acts and deeds, there are some in this country who do not like it. That, of course, is their privilege. If they do not like this country, its capitalistic system, its boundless opportunities, they have the privilege of clearing out. Amen. Always there are other countries such as Germany, Russia, and Italy where one may try one's hand at enjoying freedom and accumulating riches, providing one is not too particular. America provides all the freedom and all the opportunity to accumulate riches that any honest person may require. When one goes hunting for game, one selects hunting grounds where game is plentiful. When seeking riches, the same rule would naturally obtain. And why do we think so many people from all over the world have immigrated to America? Because they want the fertile hunting ground. If it is riches you are seeking, do not overlook the possibilities of a country whose citizens are so rich that women alone spend over $200 million annually for lipstick, rouge, and cosmetics. Think twice, you who are seeking riches, before trying to destroy the capitalistic system of a country whose citizens spend over $50 million a year for greeting cards with which to express their appreciation of their freedom. If it is money you are seeking, consider carefully a country that spends hundreds of millions of dollars annually for cigarettes, so on and so forth. I'm going to skip that paragraph. Remember also that it is but the beginning of the available sources for the accumulation of wealth. Only a few of the luxuries and non-essentials have been mentioned. But remember that the business of producing, transporting, and marketing these few items of merchandise gives regular employment to many millions of men and women who receive for their services many millions of dollars monthly and spend it freely for both the luxuries and the necessities. Especially remember that back of all this exchange of merchandise and personal services may be found an abundance of opportunity to accumulate riches. Here our American freedom comes to one's aid. There is nothing to stop you or anyone from engaging in any portion of the effort necessary to carry on these businesses. If one has superior talent, training, experience, one may accumulate riches in large amounts. Those not so fortunate may accumulate smaller amounts. Anyone may earn a living in return for a very nominal amount of labor. So there you are. Opportunity has spread its wares before you. Step up to the front, select that which you want, create your plan, put the plan into action, and follow through with persistence. Capitalistic America will do the rest. You can depend upon this much capitalist. You can depend on this much. Capitalistic America ensures every person the opportunity to render useful service and to collect riches in proportion to the value of the service. The system denies no one this right, but it does not and cannot promise something for nothing, because the system itself is irrevocably controlled by the law of economics, which neither recognizes nor tolerates for long getting without giving. The law of economics was passed by nature. There is no Supreme Court to which violators of this law may appeal. The law of the lands, the law hands out both penalties for its violation and appropriate rewards for its observance without interference or the possibility of interference of any human being. The law cannot be repealed. It is as fixed as the stars in the heavens and subject to and a part of the same system that controls the stars. May one refuse to adapt oneself to the law of economics? Certainly, this is a free country where all men are born with equal rights, including the privilege of ignoring the law of economics. What happens to them? Well, nothing happens until large numbers of men join forces for the avowed purpose of ignoring the law and taking what they want by force. Then comes the dictator with well-organized firing squads and machine guns. We have not yet reached that stage in America, but we have heard all we want to know about how the system works. Perhaps we have been fortunate enough not to demand personal knowledge of so gruesome a reality. Doubtless we shall prefer to continue with our freedom of speech, freedom of deed, and freedom to render useful service in return for riches. The practice by government officials of extending to men and women the privilege of raiding the public treasury in return for votes sometimes results in election, but as night follows day, the final payoff comes, when every penny wrongfully used must be repaid with compound interest on compound interest. If those who make the grab are not forced to repay, the burden falls on their children and their children's children, even unto the third and fourth generations. There is no way to avoid the debt. Men can, and sometimes do, form themselves into groups for the purpose of crowding wages up and working hours down. There is a point beyond which they cannot go. It is the point at which the law of economics steps in and the sheriff gets both the employer and the employees. For 6 years from 1929 to 1935, the people of America, both rich and poor, barely missed seeing the old man economics hand over to the sheriff all the businesses and industries and banks. It was not a pretty sight. It did not increase our respect for mob psychology, through which men cast reason to the winds and start trying to get without giving. We who went through those six discouraging years when fear was in the saddle and faith was on the ground cannot forget how ruthlessly the law of economics extracted its toll from both the rich and the poor, weak and strong, old and young. We shall not wish to go through another such experience. These observations are not founded upon short-time experience. They are the result of 25 years of careful analysis of the methods of both the most successful and the most unsuccessful men America has ever known. This was written almost 100 years ago, my friends? And are you seeing any repetition of history? You know, they say history repeats itself. As I was reading those lines, I thought to myself, my goodness, these things are prophetic. We've been through some of these things before. And what's happening today? The same kind of stuff that happened back in the Depression, where everybody points the finger at the producer and says, you're the bad man. You're the bad person. We need to take from you. We need to bring you down. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to accumulate wealth, if you want to abide by the principles of these philosophies that Napoleon Hill spent over a quarter of a century, be very careful about where you point your fingers, and be very careful about where you choose to invest your time, and be very careful about your philosophy, because here's the bottom line. You can't get without giving in any major way. That's the summation of this philosophy, of this, you know, these principles that Napoleon Hill put together. In order for us to accumulate wealth in any endeavor, network marketing, traditional business, it doesn't matter. The law of economics applies. We cannot get without giving. We have to give. We have to increase our value to the marketplace. Then and only then can we get. And be very careful to wish that you would get without giving. It's a curse. It's not a blessing. It's not a virtue. It's not a value, because you don't gain anything. You don't gain the metal of increasing your soul and your which you're made of. You don't get the benefit of increasing that. And that's what our capitalistic system gives to us. It gives to us the opportunity to grow and develop and change and increase our value. And in return for that, my friends, we have a bigger bank account. It really is a beautiful system. And you know what? I'm proud of it. I'm not ashamed of it. I'm proud to be an entrepreneur. I'm proud to encourage entrepreneurship in others. You know, if you've never read the book Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand, highly encourage you to get that book, read that novel, because you want to talk about prophecy, my friends. Ayn Rand wrote that book, another chilling description of what can happen to a society when the non-producers turn on the producers and really bite the very hand that feeds them. And that's what happened. So I know went a little bit long with this message, but my goodness, what a powerful message. And what a takeaway that we can grab from this message, that again, we need to learn to give before we can get. A simple sentence that sums that up. Bill, are you on the line with me? Sorry for hogging so much of the time, man.
That's all right, Paul. You're on a roll. I'm enjoying this. Listen,
anything you
just
want to add?
Well, there's so many things that I could talk about with this whole chapter, or the end of the chapter that you read. There's so much to talk about here. As a former stockbroker, as my first job just over broke, I must say that this applies to me very greatly, because I was brought up in a capitalistic family. My father, my stepfather, my father was a stockbroker, my stepfather was a bond broker. So I grew up understanding that, all four of us kids did, we grew up with the understanding that we are eventually were to build up a number, reach a total number, a capital number, and capital is not a dirty word to me, because we were taught that you can live off your capital and you're not to touch your capital. So we were taught at a very early age to save, and so our father opened up savings accounts for all his kids at the age of 10, 11, and 12. I know I was 12, and I opened up a savings account, and he said, now you don't spend that money. You use that money to buy other things that will make you more money. And that's the way I was taught. So capital is very powerful to me, and it still is to this day, because I have capital built up. It's untouchable. It's set there for me so that I can, when I turn 59, I can start reaping the benefits of some of that capital, and I'll live off between 6 and 10% of it. The other thing that this chapter talks about that also affects me is the pricing wars that go on today. And the other thing that also affects me is the giving. you know, really, if we're not giving of ourselves, if we're not giving of our personal selves and being thoughtful and kind to others and so on, then our value is not higher than the services we're giving. So in network marketing, you have to give more of yourself than what you're actually creating, because what you're doing is you're creating friendships, relationships. All business is relationships. Anybody that thinks that you can, and I know some people are doing this, but really in the long run, the key to any successful business, and Paul said last night on the webinar that I was a party to seven traditional businesses. That's true. I made most of my money in my previous life in traditional businesses, and many different kinds, from a janitorial company to a modeling agency, a big difference, to a video store chain. So with that in mind, though, I think back to all the things that I did in those different companies, and all it was relationship building. A lot of people get on the internet and want to send out websites and things like that and get people excited about stuff, but unless you build the relationship with people and create a real bond, a real link, by showing that you care about them, finding out their needs, like Paul used to say, find out their story. Then you can build on that relationship and find things in common and build on that bond and that link. And that, my friends, that's how you build a long-lasting company. Paul, I could talk about this chapter or what you read today for hours, but we don't have that kind of time. So I'll give it back to you, my friend.
Awesome, awesome comments, Bill. And just one final thought in relation to network marketing. You know, sometimes we come into network marketing and we think, oh, wow, you know, I'll recruit a few people and then watch them go to work and make me rich, you know, because we see the chart on the wall and we say, hey, let's just find a few good leaders and then I can kick back, throw my feet up. Well, you know what? The law of economics that Napoleon talked about in this chapter applies to network marketing even, because in network marketing, you can't get wealthy without giving and providing value. You know, when you join a company, first you have to provide the value of picking up the phone or going to meet somebody and sharing with them whatever it is we're sharing with them. We have to learn to do it in a manner that's effective, that's persuasive, that's attractive, that will cause that other person to see what we see and want to get involved. Okay, that's the first piece of value. But then the second piece of value, as you start to get good at that, is then you need to learn how to serve the people that are trusting you and following your leadership. And so you then have to develop yourself. One of the nice things about network marketing is you can tap into the leadership of others. You know, like, for instance, my sponsor in the business, he's a phenomenal leader, so I can bring my group to him, you know. But if you really want to make a lot of money, it's inescapable. The law of economics applies. You've got to develop yourself into a leader and learn to serve the people that are following you. So you're right, Bill. We could go on and on and on and on the content of this chapter. But it's one that touches me. You know, I'm not saying that capitalism is perfect, and it's not. I'll be the first to admit it. The reason it's not perfect is because men and women are not perfect. And as long as people have freedom, they're going to make mistakes, because that's what people do. They make mistakes. But you know what? I truly value in my heart my ability and my right and my privilege to make mistakes. Please don't ever take that away from me. Please don't ever force me to do what you think is right all the time. Please preserve my freedom and allow me to make mistakes and allow me to, you know, choose to maybe be greedy or choose to be generous. I love that freedom. And that's what we're talking about in this chapter, this beautiful system with its flaws of maintaining freedom for people and leaving them the freedom to grow and develop and to add value, and in return for that wonderful process of turning yourself from maybe a weed into a flower, in exchange for that process of turning yourself from a cocoon, coming out of a cocoon, turning into a butterfly, in exchange for that, we're able to be rewarded financially, we're able to be rewarded spiritually, we're able to be rewarded mentally, we're able to be rewarded with good health, we're able to be rewarded with good relationships. I love that freedom, and it's something that I'll fight for, and I hope that you'll fight for it with me through this wonderful industry of network marketing, as we are champions of freedom. We're champions of entrepreneurship. We're delivering more than just a product, folks. We're delivering the American dream and the opportunity to lock arms with us and get out there and do what we can in today's political environment and social environment to fight the forces of evil and keep freedom alive, financially and otherwise. So I'm going to stop there. I could go on and on. Star 6 to unmute your lines, folks, if you want to hop on. Love to hear thoughts from the call today, questions, masterminding.
Can you hear me, Paul?
Yes, sir. Melvin, I can hear you.
I'm afraid you stepped on a nerve here.
Uh-oh.
I want everybody to realize that balance is key to every aspect of life.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of evil even in capitalism.
Yes, sir.
A lot of injustice. There's a great deal of unfairness. We don't have a situation where the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer just automatically. Balance is a very key thing. And even with something like capitalism, we can manipulate it. We can play games with it. We can use people. We can take advantage of people. There's cheating at both the top and the bottom. There's cheating at the bottom when you're looking for something for nothing. There's cheating at the top when you're using your power to manipulate and take advantage of.
Agreed.
So it's very key that we don't just follow blindly, that we keep our minds open, that we understand what balance truly is, and we constantly work toward that balance and fairness. I mean, if you give some real thought to it, if there's a situation where you have one person who's worth billions and billions of dollars and you have others that have nothing, then there's a great deal that needs to be done there to justify and bring out a balance there. That's not just that doesn't exist just from the fact that one is working and earning all of that and the other is doing nothing. So just wanted to throw a little bit in there because I've seen so much, you know, a lot of what was said there, even when that was written, a lot of it was against unions and people looking for fairness. Well, if we go back in time a little bit, we were working children. Children weren't even able to go to school. We had them in the factories. And even today, we don't have the equal balance and fairness as far as equal wages for women. Compared to men. So there's a lot to be done here yet. So just wanted to throw a few things out there because I don't want us to just think that capitalism in itself, I mean, the way we have so many jobs that have been sent overseas in order for companies to get over. So there's a lot of money being made, but in the process of it being made, there's a lot of manipulating and game playing and taking advantage of that takes place. So if we stay with the laws, though, I mean we can't beat the laws that govern this universe. But we've got to keep our minds open. We've got to constantly be thinking because freedom is not just free by just laying back and no longer using the gifts that our Creator has given us. I can go on and on and on about this, but I just wanted to get a little bit out there anyway. Hey, thank you.
Melvin, I really appreciate those comments, and everything you said is, I believe, balance is key, and there's never going to be a perfect perfect system. Although we should always continue to strive to follow the laws and strive to make things better. I mean, absolutely, yes, balance is very important, I do appreciate those comments. Thank you, Melvin. Anyone else want to jump out here?
Wow, What I can say is, wow, this is Rick from California. You guys are firing me up here. This is some incredible stuff, man. Paul, the whole time, the energy, it was like I was in a, maybe in a rocket taking off, the amount of G-forces I was getting from just your enthusiasm and the energy, the passion, the feeling I can get from your voice. I can see everybody is sitting back and just feeling it, you know what I mean? You're just stirring it up right now. I gotta tell you, there's a couple of thoughts that came to mind. I'm going to make it real quick. And so we can, keep that feeling, that energy that you just pumped into us. You know, you're stirring up the minds. But there's something that I think it was Jim Rome. He talked about service in service to many leave the greatness. You know, when you get to be selfish and you talk about giving and receiving and trying to receive, you know, without giving. And it comes to the leadership is when you notice when you're serving the biggest leaders are the biggest servers. And most people got that backwards. Majority of the people have it backwards. You got to be giving and serving and thinking multitude. The more you serve, the greater you become. If you keep your mind in the past and you spend too much time in the present, you're going to miss the future. That's all that pretty much I got to say, and I want to thank you. I just want to leave it at that. But I feel your energy, and I want to thank you. Thank everybody for the comments. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Rick. Yes, sir.
For all the things negative in capitalism that Melvin mentioned, there are also just as many things positive in capitalism as well. Our system is not perfect because, Paul said it earlier, people are not perfect. We're all sinners. We all make mistakes. There are cheaters among us. But should we penalize people for working hard and making a lot of money to give back to the poor that are sitting on their butts and not doing anything with their lives? I say no way. I don't think people that work hard and make a lot of money should be penalized at all for anything. I don't think that the rich should have to carry the poor. I'm sorry. I just don't agree with it. We are all given equal abilities to obtain and get what we need to get in this life. We're all born babies. All of us are born with the same ingredients. We all have the abilities to make something of ourselves. And as bad as capitalism is in many forms, it also has many positive forms. It's exactly what Paul read here. I mean, look, we wouldn't have trains that move products across the country if it weren't for people investing in those trains so that they could carry. I mean, listen to the story, folks, that breakfast costs, you know, a few dollars nowadays. But think of where all those ingredients come from. If it weren't for putting capital into those companies so that and I know the system's not perfect. Look at Paul. He's lived in faraway places, other lands. Go to other countries and try living in those countries and see where the greatest country on this earth is. It is America. It is America. America is the greatest country on this earth. Sure, we have dozens and dozens and dozens of flaws, but we also are a caring and loving and a giving people. And the majority of us believe in God, and we trust. We trust. And so the bad apples, yes, they get the news. But trust me, there are plenty of good people out there and plenty of good people that want good things to change and good things to happen to this country. And I think we're on the right road. Paul?
Let me just throw one thing out there here. I think one thing that we should all try to do, and I've noticed, you know, is sometimes people say the rich, and they lump all people into one category that should not be lumped into one category. And what I mean by that is there are people that develop themselves, develop value, provide more value than the money that they request from people. And those people fall into the wealthy category, and that's fantastic. There's another group of people that through power and manipulation and dishonesty and unholy alliances with politicians – get without giving and manipulate the masses and take advantage of people and do make a lot of money and get to the top. And unfortunately, those people also fall into the category of the rich. And so I think that's where some of this debate comes, where we just lump everybody into the category of, ooh, they're rich, they're bad. Well, having money isn't bad. What is bad is when you take advantage of people and you use the public treasury and the public laws to really hurt people. You know, I think that's where, you know, a lot of this stuff comes. But, you know, we could go on and on and on and debate the virtues and the vices of capitalism. I mean, this debate has been going on for all throughout time. I mean, go back to ancient Greece and read some of the histories, you know, some of the history back then, you know, the debating back and forth of democracy and the evils of democracy, so on and so forth. I don't think we're going to come up with the full answer today on this call. I don't. But what we can do is we can recognize the system in which we live. You know, Jim Rohn says that the sun shines on all of us, the rain falls on all of us. Okay, we all have the fall, the summer, the winter to work with. So like or hate the system of capitalism really is irrelevant. It's the system in which we live. So what we need to do is understand it, take from it what we will, and use it to our advantage. And our, you know, the major takeaway from the call today, in my opinion, is the fact that in this system in which we live, we get rewarded for delivering value to the marketplace. So let us never, ever think we can cheat the law in our own lives. If we want to generate income, if we want to be successful in any endeavor, including network marketing, we have to follow the law. And folks, we have to develop value. We have to grow ourselves personally and spiritually. And that's part of what this call, a major part of what this call is, developing your mindset, understanding the laws that are at place so that we can use them and work with them rather than have them work against us. So that being said, I do love you guys. Thanks so much for being on the call today. I know we've gone almost an hour, but powerful principles here. And let's get out there and make it a great day. If you have more comments, you want to continue the discussion, let's not get into too much of a political discussion. Let us, you know, keep it to the laws that we can use to generate wealth in our own lives. Let's talk about those things and let's keep everything positive. And we'll see you back here tomorrow morning on the Think and Grow Rich call. Love you guys. Have a great day.